still have something to say about something anyways.
Finance and Revenue is open. Good morning, everyone. Senator Edwards will be in later. Senator Bertschinger is late. We're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2130. Let's start off with a quick briefing from Kyle, and then go to the city of Beaverton.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2130 is a bill that would make a couple changes to two existing partial property tax exemptions. The two existing exemptions are the new housing for low-income rental and the nonprofit low-income rental housing, and those are numbered 2.105 and 2.106 in the governor's tax expenditure report. And what the measure would do, the changes that it'd make to those two existing partial exemptions, is it would allow governing bodies to establish reasonable maximum holding times for land designated as low-income housing development, and allows governing bodies to elect additional qualifying criteria. It requires additional criteria to not conflict with the existing law criteria, so that'd be what's in statute. The changes would apply only to applications for the exemption received on or after the effective date of this measure and the date on which the governing body, if they choose to, adopts those reasonable maximum holding times or the other additional criteria. It would take effect on the 91st day following sine die. And just to give a little background, so these two partial property tax exemptions, they're, the qualification is based on a county or a city would be the county government that would oversee them. And then these two partial exemptions are partials in that it's an opt-in for the other taxing districts on whether or not they'll allow the exemption. However, there is the provision that this is applicable to a few property tax exemptions where once you get 51% of the overall taxing authority for the property, then all other districts come in, so it becomes a fully exempt property. So in practice, that's generally, to get 51%, you're generally talking the county, the city, and then if you get the school district, you have the 51%. We do have the paperwork on this. There was no fiscal impact. The revenue impact, there's no direct revenue impact, as these are up to the county or the city governing body, and then the others opt in. And the changes in the bill really could add more limitations in some cases by county or city governments. It would be up to their choice as long as they don't conflict with what's in the statute. So by doing that, you could see a narrowing of the exemption in some cases. And then we've also heard that by giving more authority to the counties or the cities, giving them the ability to enact sideboards, if you will, could actually increase the use of these two exemptions going forward. But it is no direct revenue impact.
Thank you. Okay. Mark Sansucci and your team? John? Dorinda?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is, and committee members, my name is John Van Landingham. I work as a lawyer for Lane County Legal Aid in Eugene. This is our third presentation as a panel, and so we have an order. and I get to talk first. I'm an affordable housing advocate. This is not my bill. I'm here to support it because it does something that I have advocated for a long time, to make it clear that local governments can add additional criteria to these two property tax exemptions if it will make them more comfortable in adopting them. As your staff described, these are local options. They're not automatic. They don't happen unless the local government adopts them. They are very important to affordable housing developments, as you'll hear from one of our panel. And I have worked with local governments over the years to encourage them to do it. Some local governments have been hesitant to do it because they wanted the sideboards that your staff referred to. And it wasn't clear in the statute that they could add sideboards. This will make that clear. Your staff described the exemptions. Let me add a few things. It is local option. If it is 100, if you get over 51% of the taxing districts supporting it, you get to 100% exemption. That typically is a city and a school district. Why would a school district support this? They may care about affordable housing, but they also often see the benefit of affordable housing to having students who succeed. And in addition, in gentrifying communities like my own in Eugene, or aging communities, they want students. And you get students through families, and you get families through affordable housing. If the entity that gets the exemption violates the rules, and typically it's the city that monitors compliance, often with an annual report for these two different exemptions. If there's a noncompliance, the city's required to revoke the exemption, and there's a 10-year clawback. Okay, so I have not seen in my 30 years of doing this, I've not seen a noncompliance, I've not seen a clawback occur, but they are available, it can happen. What kind of sideboards are we talking about? The sideboards could be things such as making sure that the entity that applies for the exemption is really an affordable housing developer, instead of somebody who wants to simply claim that they are going to build affordable housing. Maybe somebody who these exemptions also apply to vacant land that's being held for development, because it often takes 3 to 5 years to develop a project. But what if somebody claimed to be a developer and didn't develop it and sat on it for 20 years?
John, I hate to interrupt, but could you, before you get much further into the weeds here, start off with the perspective of the problem we're trying to solve with this, and just back up just a couple steps.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what we're trying to do is promote affordable housing. Property tax exemptions are a very important tool for affordable housing developers, because it reduces your operating expenses. If you can reduce your operating expenses, you can reduce your rent. If you can't reduce your rent, as you may hear, you may not build your project. You know, this is not the sort of deal where you go out and you measure the market, see what the market would bear in terms of rent, and if you can borrow the money and build it for enough money to pay that mortgage, you build it. That's not the way our deals work. Our deals work with scrimping together 5 to 10 different funding sources, keeping your operating expenses low, and building the damn thing and then operating it. And you're not going to sell it in 5 years to cover your costs. You're going to hold it for the life of whatever. So you need lower operating expenses. And these property tax exemptions are very important. They've been in existence for a long time, one of them since 1985, the other since 1989. Both of them have sunsets. You've reviewed those sunsets recently and extended them. So these two exemptions have stood the test of time. They are very important. They haven't been adopted by that many cities. I think about 6 currently have it. We'd like to encourage more to have it. Beaverton would like to have it and use it, but it wants to have some limitations, have the ability or clear ability to have some limitations on it so that it doesn't get burned. Some cities, I worked with Staten some time ago. Staten wanted to do it, but their lawyer was conservative, as many local government lawyers are. It wasn't clear to that lawyer that the city could adopt a sideboard, for example, a maximum amount of exemption. The city might want to say, we're willing to waive some property tax revenue, but not more than X. Not clear in the statute currently that they could do that. These amendments would make it clearer that cities can adopt sideboards. I think Beaverton will talk about what it would like to do. And my hope, my expectation, is that more local governments would use this tool if it was clear that they could add those sideboards. More local governments using this tool means, to me, more affordable housing developments.
Thank you.
Chair Hess, members of the committee, my name is Mark Sansusi, and it's my honor to serve as a city councilor in the city of Beaverton. And I'm here to tell you a little bit about Beaverton's experience with these statutes and why we've come down to propose some modifications to the statutes to do the things that Mr. Van Landingham has just spoken about. We have a strong commitment and interest in building affordable housing in Beaverton. We have several projects that have been constructed over the last 10, 15 years. We are trying to get more done. You're going to hear from one of our new partners who's working on a development in Beaverton. We're trying to get more in place as well. And as Mr. Van Landingham mentioned, there are many financial tools to make it easier for affordable housing projects to come into being. One of those tools that's extremely powerful is for the local jurisdiction to buy land and make it available to the affordable housing project at virtually no cost. That's something we have done numerous times in the past. But in addition to that, we like to offer as many of the other tools as are possible. Vertical housing tax credits, the property tax exemption that's covered covered by this statute and by the related statute. Any other tool that we can find in the toolbox that we can make available to affordable housing developers, we're trying to do, because we have a strong civic commitment to serving the people in our community who need lower rent housing. So given that, we took advantage of ORS 540-548, 307-540-548. We passed an ordinance in the city of Beaverton that would allow for these property tax exemptions for qualifying projects. We had the full support of all of the taxing jurisdictions in Beaverton, including our school district, for the reasons Mr. Van Landingham mentioned. However, we felt obliged to establish a sunset on our ordinance, which is going to expire later this year. And it was because of the difficulty that we saw in being able to establish limits on the qualifications for affordable housing developers and projects. The most concerning limitation is that the statutes as currently standing allow somebody to request a property tax exemption for land they hold for future development of affordable housing. But we can't set a time limit on it, so that in principle somebody could purchase some land, establish a not-for-profit, claim that they intend to provide affordable housing, and then not do it. And at that point, the land is outside the property tax system in our jurisdiction. We couldn't find a way in the existing statutes to prevent that from happening. So we put a sunset on it, hoping that we could get some modifications to the bill. And once those modifications are in place, with the kindness of the legislature, we will remove the sunset from our ordinance, and we will continue to provide property tax exemptions to our projects. We have done so 2 years in a row now. About 2 months ago, we granted these property tax exemptions to three projects that applied in our city. We are looking forward to a fourth coming forward with a request for the exemption, and we fully intend to provide these exemptions to all qualifying affordable housing projects that come forward in Beaverton. We believe strongly that allowing the lower operating cost benefit of the property tax exemption will benefit the rent levels in these projects, and we want to make sure that we continue to support our partners in providing affordable housing like this. So with the passage of House Bill 2130, we feel like we'll have the legal security to do so without endangering our property tax payers across the city. And in addition, as Mr. Van Landingham mentioned, by allowing local jurisdictions to establish appropriate sideboards that don't conflict with the criteria written into the statute, we feel like other jurisdictions around us and other jurisdictions around the state will take advantage of these statutes to provide these exemptions to other projects around the state, which in our mind would be a very good thing for everybody. So with that, we hope you will vote in favor of this modification to the statutes, and happy to take any questions.
Good morning, Chair Hess and committee members. My name is Dorenda Schubert, and I have the honor of serving as the Executive Director for Bridge Meadows, an intentional intergenerational community that has utilized affordable housing financing to support the development of our projects. Bridge Meadows is a three-generation neighborhood dedicated to helping children become adopted from foster care and supporting their parents so their families thrive, and then providing meaning and purpose to elders. So three generations come together to solve a social problem. We've received national attention in the last 4 years since we've opened our doors and welcomed people home, bringing national attention to our beautiful state of Oregon. And so today I'm coming to you to ask for your careful review and support of House Bill 2130, which would allow local jurisdictions to add criteria or program elements that are consistent with the state statute allowing property tax exemptions. And here's why. Because giving these municipalities the ability to do so would further ability for people like us to create more affordable housing. It would provide healthier guidelines for affordable housing based on the different needs of the different municipalities. Also, it can be too much of a risk for municipalities to do affordable housing, and this allows, this would help cities participate, giving organizations like ours more opportunities to add affordable housing. Without these changes, the only avenue that cities have as Councillor Sanssouci said, was to either sunset or repeal the program, which is really unfortunate because then that makes it very difficult to create affordable housing. When we know a city has a property tax exemption, that's an indication to us that they're really going to invest and be a true partner with our organization. It also is an indicator to other funders that we have the support of the city and we can leverage that to other funders. And lastly, as John stated, it allows us to use those dollars that we would have to pay for property taxes and reinvest them into the operating cost of our program, allowing us to provide health and well-being services so that our residents live healthier lives and thereby we have healthier Oregonians. So today, our board of directors and leadership recognize how a community such as Bridge Meadows meets the City of Beaverton's community vision to bring together the generations and create more affordable housing for the seniors. We recognize the city should be able to have reasonable expectations of its partners. Please support the proposed legislation of House Bill 2130. This will provide an opportunity for Oregon seniors and families to have safe, high-quality, affordable housing. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, could I add something?
Sure.
John Van Lanningham, I realize I left something important out. There are existing criteria in both of these statutes that are crucial to why we're all here. The first is that the developer who gets the exemption must either be a charity, a nonprofit, or if it's a for-profit, it must show the local government that it's passing through the property tax savings in reduced rent. In other words, there's a dollar-for-dollar savings in terms of reduced rent. Secondly, these projects are limited to people at 60% of adjusted median income. So we're talking about poor people. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, they have to be rentals. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Sanssouci, you said that you sunsetted this ordinance, and I'm in the fog about why there was a need to do that.
Chair Hess, thank you. When we discussed and passed the city ordinance to enable the use of this property tax exemption, we had a fairly substantial conversation both among ourselves and with our city attorney as to whether or not we could protect the city from bad actors. We like the good actors. Ms. Schubert and Bridge Meadows, the community partners for affordable housing, the several affordable housing developers that have worked with the city in the past are the kind of people we want to continue to work with. What we saw is that the existing statutes have a couple of technical issues that keep us from ensuring, particularly that somebody doesn't game the system by acquiring land, establishing essentially a bogus not-for-profit, and using that to apply for a property tax exemption, which we would be unfortunately forced to grant because the criteria in the statute don't have enough flexibility to allow us to decide for ourselves whether or not this organization actually intends to provide affordable housing. So we would find ourselves in a position of granting a property tax exemption to a property owner who doesn't plan to do what they're supposed to do in order to get the property tax exemption. And we couldn't find a way to prevent that from happening under the statute as written. And so we wanted to make sure that the statutes were modified so that we could establish in our ordinance time limits on ownership of property for the purposes of developing affordable housing. And we're not looking at short time limits. We're not trying to cut off affordable housing. We're trying to say that, okay, if you're going to acquire land and say within 8 years you haven't done anything, maybe you're not really intending to do that, and maybe we need to withdraw the property tax exemption, something of that sort. We will have a significant debate about what the specifics are of the sideboards we want to attach, but they won't be particularly onerous because we do want to provide affordable housing.
Senator Boquist?
Thank you, sir. I just have an interesting observation. I think all five members of this committee at various times have talked about the need to provide flexibility to local governments and tools and so on and so forth. Yet I'm reminded just in the last couple of weeks of representatives of the city and the county organizations and assessors all coming in and telling us legislators ought to put all the sideboards on, and you got to have more structure and more bureaucracy and, you know, more limitations on this stuff. Yet the actual cities themselves and some of the actual counties themselves come in and ask for the flexibility that their own organization seems to oppose. So it's just a dichotomy of strangeness, Mr. Chair, but I'm perfectly fine with the bill.
Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark, affordable is a very vague term. What does it mean to the city of Beaverton?
Chair Haas, Senator Riley, I'm going to refer in part to what Mr. Van Landingham said earlier. The statute defines a measure of affordability, which is 60% of
BMI, adjusted median income.
For the purposes of this tax exemption, that's the criterion we use and that we intend to use. We don't intend to impose a different measure of for the purposes of this tax exemption. From a more conceptual point of view, the city of Beaverton considers affordable housing to be that which is affordable to the people in the community that really can't afford market rate housing. Market rate rents are fairly high. We have some reasonably less expensive rental housing available in Beaverton, partly because of its age, partly because of location. But again, for people who are, for instance, a two-income family on minimum wage incomes, even those are not within their price range. And so generally what it comes down to is some sort of public subsidy that attaches to the project, either through, as I've said at the beginning, the city acquiring land and then leasing it to the project at a nominal rate, which we've done in three instances in the past, or providing tax exemptions such as this one, or any of a variety of other things. And in addition, we will waive development fees sometimes, or we will provide low-cost loans, or, I mean, there's a variety of techniques. But it all comes down to reducing the cost of construction and reducing the cost of operating so that rents can be essentially below market. And to the degree that they can be substantially below market, they can serve even lower income families or lower income seniors.
If I could add to that, what this bill would do would be to say to Beaverton, if you want to target people that are even lower income than 60% of adjusted median income, you can do it.
Yeah, we would love to.
And I not to argue with Senator Boquist, I would say that there's a difference between the legislature telling the city what it must do and the city picking its own criteria and applying them to its projects. And that's what Beaverton wants to do. It wants to be able to, I guess I did pick an argument.
That should teach me to keep my mouth shut.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The problem with lawyers is lawyers, okay? So let me clarify so you understand. I mean, I think multiple times every member of this committee has expressed our desire to give more tools to cities and more tools to counties so they can select their own destiny. My point is the organization for the cities and the counties as an association or body or whatever are consistently telling us to put more bumper boards on to do more directing. And I think, at least in my personal case, I'm more than willing to let the counselor and his lawyer sink or swim themselves because it's their community.
Great.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Thank you. I can tell you've done this panel testimony before.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's heartfelt, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 2130. And by the way, Senate Bill 80 is not going to be heard today. We're not going to have some amendments still being prepared. So I think Senator Edwards is on his way, but we're going to move to a work session on House Bill 2130.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2130A to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2130 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Boquist.
Yes.
Edwards. Riley.
Yes.
Boquist.
Yes.
Chair
Haas. Aye. Measure passes. House Bill 2130 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate. I will be the carrier. Senator Edwards is excused, and I will close the work session on House Bill 2130. And I will open up a work session from a bill that we took up last week and needed some time to breathe, and I think our members are okay there. Open up a work session on House Bill 2486. Senator Boquist, or discussion, Senator Boquist?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2486 to the floor, A, to the floor with a do pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2486 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do pass recommendation. Senator Boquist?
Just for clarification, I believe all the members received, and it's part of the record. Mr. Phillips, I think, was kind enough to send us one of those good real-world examples so that we could clarify and understand exactly what was transpiring in this bill. Is, of course, simply a correction of the constitutional issue from a court case of some sort.
Yes, thank you. And thank you, Mr. Phillips. That was helpful. All right. Discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Benziger?
Yes.
Senator Edwards? Senator Riley?
Aye.
Senator Boquist?
Aye.
Chair Hass?
Hass votes aye. Edwards is excused. The measure passes. Senator Boquist will be the carrier.
Lovely. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, that clears our decks for today. We'll still try to keep working on 80.
Mr. Chair, 2492.
So sorry.
That's okay.
I just went on the ones that are highlighted here. Let's open up a public hearing on 2492. I was wondering why you guys were hanging around.
We enjoy Senate revenue hearings.
Well, we all do.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This one was complicated.
Morning. House Bill 2492 has to deal with the Oregon Facilities Authority, and in the issue in front of you is primarily the Oregon Facilities Authority was established in 1989. By the legislature in order to work as a conduit, as a work between the nonprofit organizations within the state and allow them to utilize the tax-exempt status that could be issued for bonds by the state treasurer. So that allowed them for the nonprofits to utilize this for their projects within Oregon. What this bill is asking you to do is allow for that authority to be used for projects that are still originating by nonprofits in Oregon but have part of that project or that project outside the state. And it does that by finding a the definition or altering the definition of what is within Oregon for the project. So that's the decision that you're being asked to change, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Welcome.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Laura Lockwood McCall. I'm the director of the Debt Management Division in the Oregon State Treasury. Our executive director, Gwen Griffith, couldn't be here this morning, so we did submit some written testimony to the chair that was also provided at House Revenue, where this bill originated. OFA has been around, as Mr. Malik has stated, since the 80s, and it was created by the legislature as a vehicle to finance nonprofit capital projects around our state. It is composed of seven members who are appointed by the state treasurer from a balance of political parties, and we have an executive director, we have bond counsel, and financial advisors. And as nonprofits come to us, and that can include anyone as large as the Providence Healthcare System or Good Samaritan, to really small nonprofits in different parts of the state who need to access tax-exempt capital markets. They get both a federal tax exemption as well as a state tax exemption on the interest that's on the bonds, and that's why investors are interested in purchasing these bonds. We have rules of the road in terms of credit quality, in terms of public offerings, but we also do a lot of private bank placements. All told, we've issued over $3.2 billion in bonding for all sorts of nonprofits throughout the state. In the past year or so, this particular group of folks who are on our board have been brainstorming how we can continue to help nonprofits in Oregon. We note that there's a number of nonprofits that have a footprint in Oregon, for example, Providence, but who have facilities across the river in Washington State. And there are many others that we're seeing more and more as consolidation. When we have to do financings for multiple state nonprofits, it's often very complicated and the logistics are difficult. So one of our goals, as through the board and through the treasurer's office, was to give a slightly additional authority to finance projects that are both in-state and out-of-state, but there must be a nexus, and those out-of-state projects do not receive our state tax exemption. That's the essence of the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions about our program.
Thank you. What we almost always ask on almost every one of these technical bills is what's a relevant case or story problem?
For example, Providence was doing electronic medical records improvements, and so we had multiple states where we had to sell bonds and coordinate with multiple facilities authorities, similar types to us, and it just made it logistically difficult. So we think we can offer one-stop shopping to get the financing done in one place. We do collect a fee for our services, which helps subsidize work with smaller nonprofits in the state. We're able to keep those costs lower. I'm talking about OFA now, which is completely self-supporting through its fees. So Providence's healthcare financing a year and a half ago is a really good example. We anticipate that there's also a retirement care nonprofit in Southern Oregon that has many facilities in many states, but it's headquartered in our state. So we're really just looking to provide additional services to Oregon nonprofits with one-stop shopping for their financing needs.
Yeah. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I note that this drew several no votes on the other side of the House in the committee, and I'm guessing it's because the byline right off the top here says or the lead-off on the staff measure says, authorize the issuance of pass-through revenue bonds for projects outside of the state of Oregon.
I didn't get to, through the chair, I didn't get to control the title. But in essence, we anticipate continuing to work with Oregon nonprofits, and some of them have opportunities outside of our state borders. But the bill was designed so there has to be a nexus. It's not like we're running around the country financing out-of-state projects for folks. We're working with folks who have a footprint in our state, and where we can help facilitate them doing more consolidated financings.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
The example you provided, which we always like examples here, trying to keep it farmer simple, it was IT. And, of course, I would assume, anyway, in the example, you could easily make the reach, and, you know, if you were financing an IT project that was across the river in Vancouver or something along like that, in fact, not only would there be entity and nexus here, but the IT storage and the IT that supports those facilities in Oregon might, in fact, be across the river in the data center over there. Is that sort of the type of project?
Through the chair, it very well could be. In the case of Providence, and I'm trying to think of some of the other healthcare facilities. Kaiser Permanente is a nonprofit in our state. These are nonprofits that just span many states, and the goal is to help them get their capital needs met, tax exempt. But again, only the portions of the projects that are in Oregon get our state tax exemption.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are you familiar with what other states do when it's reciprocal?
Through the chair, it's a little bit of a controversy. The state of Wisconsin has created a financing authority, and they'll finance a project for any state anywhere in the country. And so I know there's a nonprofit financing authority in most states that do healthcare and education. We're not really suggesting we want to do that. So that's the most extreme alternative. What we currently have is just a financing vehicle for nonprofits in our own state.
Just out of curiosity, is there a motive for that? Some sort of
a fee that they collect for providing
so
that?
So they just sort of see it as a profit center?
That's correct.
Okay. Any questions? All right. Thank you. And we don't have anyone else up
what
here.
Was the House vote on the floor?
We can find out. We can find it. skip over you when you came up here, Laura. Senator Edwards, welcome.
Thank you for your
patience,
Mr. Chair.
Kids to drop off.
53-6.
53-6.
All right, well, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2492. Sorry to almost skip over you, Laura. We had it here the whole time. And I think what we'll do is we'll let that one breathe before we take it up again and schedule a work session down the road. And so that clears our decks, except for one thing. Senator Edwards, we took a vote on House Bill 2486 and House Bill 2130. Would you like to vote on either of those? Or both?
I would like to, please.
Without objection, I'll reopen the work session through which we had a vote on House Bill 2130 for purposes of Senator Edwards casting a vote. Senator Edwards, how would you like to vote?
Yes.
Edwards votes yes. That concludes that work session. And without objection, open up a work session on House Bill 2486 for purposes of Senator Edwards casting a vote. Senator Edwards, how would you vote?
Yes.
Edwards votes yes. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2486.
Oh, by the way, you're carrying one.
That clears our decks. Thank you all. We all adjourn.